This is KUT. I'm Jennifer Staten. Mental illness can be hard to acknowledge or talk about. Two Austinites who are educators and advocates with the National Alliance on Mental Illness want to help people get past that, and they're focusing on the African-American community. I recently talked with Charnell Nunley and LaDetrick Leonard, who goes by just Leonard. They're on a quest to get people comfortable talking about what can be an awkward topic. And they started by sharing their own stories.
My lived experience with mental illness is as a family member. I have a long history of mental illness in my family on both my mom and my dad's side. However, a lot of us either misdiagnosed, underdiagnosed, or not diagnosed at all. And growing up, you know it, but no one ever wants to talk about it. It didn't become real to me until my mom, I guess when I was in high school, had what you would call a mental break. And then with communicating with my dad later, which were two separate households, my dad came back from military and said that he had PTSD and paranoia schizophrenic. Being a teenager and a young adult, you still didn't connect. It didn't make sense. It wasn't until recently, last year, my daughter, who's 23, had a mental break herself while she's a senior in college. And her being my only biological child, it all started to really, really hit home. And she has PTSD and also depression and anxiety. That's what her diagnosis is. So having to deal with that as a dad made me start to really do a lot of research and get a lot of information, and hence me being involved with NAMI. And the way I got introduced to NAMI is when I moved here from Dallas almost 2 years now. And at my school, I have an adult education. And there were a lot of students mentally and emotionally challenged, and I didn't know how to support them in their way. So I got in touch with NAMI, and I said, could you come in and do a presentation? NAMI came in, gave great information, great resources. But as she was speaking, I started having revelations like, man, I think I can get involved in this. And I got involved. And during that time being involved is when my daughter had the mental break. So everything happened at the right time. I knew exactly what to do and what the signs were and what I needed to do moving forward because of NAMI. And I knew that my daughter... life was going to change drastically. And then that propelled me to really start taking a closer look at my family history face on versus being in denial about it.
Leonard, I'm curious what it has been like for you for much of your life as a young person and as an adult to have close family members and loved ones who have mental illness. What has that and continue to be? What is that like for you?
Early on, the first thing you experience, from my perspective, what I experienced was denial. You just didn't want to believe that it was real. The second thing that I think I experienced was shame. You felt shame, like, why does my particular family members have to have this condition, or why they act strange, or why is this person mood changing all the time? I didn't have all the answers. I just knew it wasn't normal behavior. After shame came judgment for me, because in my particular community, in the African-American community, you just don't talk about mental illness. You don't say the word mental illness. Everyone says things like your crazy uncle, or you know your aunt just ain't quite right, or everyone has that cousin that's different. That's the word, quote unquote, different. Or we blame it on behavior. It's always bad behavior, never mental. Always bad behavior. And that's been the stigma that, you know, it's like a pink elephant in the room. You still don't talk about it. Don't say that word. And those who want to learn about it, there's not enough information about it in that particular community, let alone resources or resources that you may think are, should be available. So that was as a child. And growing up as an adult now, because I've accepted it and I realize that I am the primary caretaker for my mom, who is legally disabled, so she can never work again and so forth. So I have to deal with that directly. And being the primary caretaker for my adult daughter, supporting her through college and all those kind of things, I have to manage her lifestyle, help manage her mental and emotional health. And then with my dad, he's still a bit in denial about his diagnosis is schizophrenia, but there's times where I have to be patient, very, very patient, and hear some of the stories that he say and some of the conspiracy theories and so forth. And I have to be able to discern between what's real and what's the fantasy. But to him, it's very much real. So I have to say that's the illness and not say it's him, it's the illness that he has. So it's a balancing act quite a bit.
Charnel, tell us your personal story, mental health and mental illness, how that has impacted your life.
I'm a person living with a mental illness for the past 6 years. It started after high school when I went away to college. At first, I didn't tell my family anything because I started to see a doctor secretly. And I started to take medication secretly because it was just something you don't talk about in the family. The most common thing that you hear about when you talk about a mental illness is pray about it. And that's just a phrase that African Americans say whenever it's tough times and they don't want to talk about a mental illness. It's just pray about it. And unfortunately, pray alone does not help in my case. I started to open up to my mom after I couldn't go to classes anymore. I couldn't be around people. My paranoia was going off the chain. And then after 2 years of being in my college and having help from my doctors and stuff, I ended up withdrawing and moving to Maryland.
And Charnel, what is your diagnosis?
I am diagnosed as schizophrenia with agoraphobia and anxiety and depression. Being diagnosed is a process. So I went from one diagnosis to another diagnosis to another one until I finally felt comfortable with the diagnosis that I have now. And it takes years for that to happen. And unfortunately, as insurance goes, your doctors might not be the same throughout that year. So you're going to have to retell your story over again for each new doctor. And that's another thing that's a factor in getting help. People don't want to be hassled with that.
So a theme that's come up in both of your stories and your discussions is don't talk about it. We don't acknowledge that. We don't share it. You all, though, are today talking about it very freely and openly, and we all appreciate that and will benefit from that. How did you get comfortable talking about mental health, mental illness in a society and in a culture that does not encourage that?
It wasn't until my first hospitalization. It happened in Maryland. It wasn't until after that that I talked to my family about it openly because, you know, they're going to know that I'm away for a couple of days. And so that's when I started to openly talk about it to my family. To my friends, that's a different story. I had to ease them into it. I had to let them know that I wasn't changed, but I am living with this person, with this illness. And it wasn't until after I saw a NAMI presentation and I took the NAMI class that I was like, I can talk about this. I can help people.
And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Yes.
I think with me, wanting to make a difference became a real big priority to me. And I just felt obligated to open my mouth and say something just in case there's some people that need to hear it, or just in case there's somebody out there that may be going through something very, very similar and not have an idea on what to do. So I got past my fear of being judged or the stigma of, I can't believe that's going on in his family, to a point of, you know what, if my family member, which they do, have diabetes or cancer, would I be ashamed to say that? So why would I be ashamed to talk about a mental illness if I wouldn't be ashamed to talk about a physical illness? And that is what helps me propel to be able to speak about it so freely.
Do you have any advice for people who may have a loved one that they think may have mental illness, or maybe they themselves think that they may have a mental illness and are seeking help? Do you have advice for how to start those conversations?
Just come with an open heart, because it's a very deep topic and it's very serious and you shouldn't question it. And I know it's hard to come out to your family, because it was hard for me too. But once you start to educate people, that's when they look at things differently. So what I had to do was educate my family.
If I was having a conversation with someone who is either probably struggling or suspecting they're struggling with it, or a family member, my number one thing would be questions. I would ask questions without judgment. I would ask things like, how are you? And they're normally going to say how they're doing. And I'm going to ask again, no, really, how are you? Because I want them to know that I want to go past surface. And then the next thing I'll be, okay, how are you mentally? How are you emotionally? When I start getting that kind of details about questions, it's letting them know that I'm okay and I'm concerned and I'm curious about how you really, really are. What level are you functioning at? And then once they feel that comfort, if they trust you and you make that connection, they'll start to say, to be honest with you, I do find myself a little down sometime. Or, I need to probe a little more. Well, how often is that? What does down look like for you? Do you know what depression is? Are you fearful about things? Are you familiar with anxiety? How often does that happen? When you start probing with those kind of questions, but with an open heart, an open mind, and also with no judgment, no agenda, just freely asking questions about, I'm concerned about you. That's how I would start those conversations out.
These days, the internet and social media, people share so much, and there's so much out there. But this still seems like an area where people are nervous to talk about it, embarrassed. They do encounter judgment sometimes when they speak up. Why do you all think there is still such a stigma about mental illness, mental health? Why is it still so hard for us to talk about that?
I don't think we as a society has done enough to break the stigma. We haven't done enough to communicate and market mental illness as a way to the mass media, to everybody, that it's just like having another illness. If we would get past the mental versus the physical illness and just call it illness, I think people would be freer to talk about it. And secondly, weakness or craziness or helplessness, those things are tied to mental illness. With diabetes or cancer, you say, okay, there's treatment. Let's still get treatment medication. You're fine. You can live with that. But if you say I have schizophrenia, the same resources are available. Treatment, medication. But when you say that you're on medication, all of a sudden, it's like a red dot's put on your forehead. And that's why people don't like to talk about it. But if we started having more of these kind of dialogues and see that it's just as common as a common cold, If we start having those conversations, I think that will lessen that wall of judgment.
The image itself of a mental illness is negative. Think about how in the news there's always a shooting, someone always has a mental illness with it. That's what people associate mental illness with someone being negative. If we could just open up the minds and show that there's a different light to mental illness and educate correctly about it. Also, if you like Google things and stuff pops up and stuff like that, and memes and cartoons and everything just displays it as craziness, as bad. So that's what I think about it.
When the media puts something out there and mental illness is attached to it, it's extreme cases. But that's either someone who has not had treatment, someone who's not diagnosed, someone who's not taking their medication. So those episodes happen. But on this half, there's millions of people who living with mental illness, whether that be mild forms or extreme forms. But because they have treatment, they're managing it and they're living a stable life. But there's no news behind that. There's no news behind someone living a stable life managing their mental illness. There's news behind dramatic scenes and extreme cases.
You all are both African American, and I want to hear about the intersection of mental illness and mental health care with the African American community. Describe how the mental health system is set up or not set up to work with African Americans who come to the system needing assistance.
We're not represented in the as psychiatrists or psychologists. I've been dealing with my mental illness for 6 years, and I've never met an African-American counselor or doctor. And when I say doctor, I mean someone to prescribe the medication. So, yeah. But I'm hopeful that that will change. But it is a bit awkward because you want to see your own people somehow involved in there. I know it sounds weird, but that's how I felt when I first started. I wanted to see that there was more African-American patients, that I wasn't alone. I wasn't the only African-American in the psych ward.
The first thing that comes to mind is the high rate of unemployment in the African-American community is directly related to insurance. So if there's a high percentage of people that doesn't work, then there's going to be a high percentage of people who does not have health insurance. If you don't have health insurance, it's hard to be able to afford to go get providers and treatment and so forth. So that's one layer of how unemployment and lack of health insurance are connected. Then on top of that, you have the stigma that goes along with the title. In the African-American community, the label, they don't want the label. We don't like to be able to say our child has this, our mother has this, the label itself. But the label is actually needed to be able to get the treatment. And the only way to get the treatment is if you have insurance. And sometimes you need representation to be able to even help get the, where can I go get signed up for insurance? And if I have insurance, where can I go get treatment? And I like what Charnel said about African-American doctors and African-American patients. That shows you that, A, the doctors that are African-American have not chosen, or there's not enough of them to be able to say, I want to deal with mental illness with African-Americans. Well, your patient count will be short because there's not a lot of African-American families that can either afford your treatment or have the resources for insurance to get your treatment. So you're going to have a very, very small base of clientele, which wouldn't support your business model in a lot of cases.
And in some cases, they don't accept your insurance. So they can discriminate based on your insurance. That's another one. And I have to agree with Leonard on that.
Now, I will tell you, I have seen a trend over the last several years, mental health clinics in African-American and also the Hispanic community. I've noticed a lot of it popping up. They're popping up because they can easily prescribe the medication, which is directly tied to money. So we have a community of people that can, we can diagnose them and give them the label. If they'll accept the label, in return, they can get legally disabled and get a check for the rest of their life. So you have a family here that has two or three people that goes down to this clinic. The clinic finds the resources for them to get the insurance. The insurance covers the medication. The medication makes the clinic profit or the doctor profit. The family's benefit is my kids got to take this medication, but now I get a check for each one of them for the rest of their lives. So now I'll accept the label at the clinic. I won't tell anybody about it in the community because we're not going to talk about this. But I will let the clinic label them where I can get that check for the rest of my life and for that, their life. So you got three family members in one household collecting a check for mental illness for the rest of their lives. In their minds, that's financial security. But I won't tell anybody where I get the checks.
Let me ask you all this. I want to keep getting at that idea that African-American patients and family members are not encountering, I'm going to say, culturally appropriate or sensitive treatment when they do seek treatment. So given the fact that we know there is not a high representation of African-Americans among doctors and practitioners, so an African-American patient, we'll say for this example, who suspects he or she may have a mental illness, goes into a doctor's office, encounters a white provider. What can that provider do differently and better to provide an adequate service and appointment for an African-American patient that would be different than if the white provider is seeing a white patient, a patient of Asian descent, a patient of Hispanic heritage? what has to happen to make that a successful start or a successful appointment for that African-American patient?
I think the number one thing that our white or non-black practitioner could do is educate themselves about the cultural differences. During that interview with a African-American, the first thing I would do is acknowledge the cultural differences. I would go ahead, before we even go any step further, they need to be able to say, I understand within the African-American community, there are some differences when it comes to mental illness. I understand there are some challenges that may take place just because of your community. I can't say I come from that community. I can't say I fully understand it. But I do acknowledge that there are a certain amount of challenges culturally that's tied to what's wrong with you medically. If they would acknowledge it from the beginning, I think, or I believe, that that will at least create a bridge for the African-American patient to start to see trust, to be able to see, okay, because the African-American patient is already walking in with one, on one hand, I have to deal with the fact I have mental illness or possibly have it. B, I'm going to talk to a white person that knows nothing about me or my community. So right away, I have two things that's holding me back from getting what I need, or I'm suspecting I might not get what I need. But if you could at least acknowledge the cultural differences, it takes one of them down. Now let's just deal with the medical part. But I think in the very beginning, just go ahead and acknowledge that I understand it's different. And here are some things that I may understand, but if you could teach me more about that, it would help me treat you better, give you better treatment.
And what are the cultural differences?
I mean, treatment plan.
And what are the cultural differences specifically that a practitioner, that you would want a practitioner to know about?
Family support. Education, like the level of education is in your family. What do you think, Leonard?
She says family support. What comes to my mind is acknowledge there may be a lack of family support. You have to automatically assume there could potentially be a lack of family support. You definitely want to assume there's a lack of education about mental illness. You want to assume that this has never been talked about, right? Once, if you go into an assuming that right away, you know you got to do some educating. You got to be able to show. And I think two things that are very, very important is that you got to see how connected the faith community is to the African-American community. That is very, very important. In our society, the community of African-Americans, that is the source. So you need to know that faith is connected to her belief system and her value system, and it could work for or sometimes against what this person believes about mental illness. You have to acknowledge that I know that faith is somewhere in there, right? And then the last thing is I will probably assume that there's multiple people that they know that are having similar issues. And just by statistics being 70% of African-Americans coming from single mothers, you probably want to assume there's probably not a male figure around. So when you throw all of those, that recipe together, you're like, okay, now at least I know I have some kind of format to go by. Like, what can I talk about and how can I see how this works? You agree with that?
Yeah, I'm good with that because church is where our people go to seek help most of the time. So I think faith does play a big role in it.
Are there some of those factors that cut across different racial and ethnic communities? I mean, lack of family support, just knowing what we know about mental illness in society in general, are any of those factors common to maybe any patient who might come in?
Well,
or, I mean, is there any common ground across communities? And not all of them. Some of them I'm wondering about, you know, lack of family support or lack of education or knowledge about mental illness.
The only one I could think of is that they all, every family group, I mean, regardless of ethnicity, probably deals with a certain level of denial. But when you talk about the other factors I mean, and when I say denial, it's because in the Asian community, same as the African American, you don't talk about it. Hispanic community, you don't talk about it. But if you do talk about it, there's no resources. All right, there are, but they're not, you know, they're not educated about it. And then I also think with Caucasian families, it could also be a certain level of denial. I just don't want my family, friends, and neighbors knowing about this. So I think denial is the one commonality. But I think once you go past denial, that's when the other factors, like, I think African-Americans have a unique set of challenges and circumstances when it comes to mental illness that the other ones may not, as a whole, have to deal with.
Can you briefly describe the extra layer that is there for African-American men?
Well, because there's a lack of African-American men in family groups at this time in society, the ones that do choose to say, I'm going to build a family structure, you're looked at as the fixer, the repairer, the rock. You're supposed to have the answers. You're supposed to protect, provide, create solutions. And with mental illness, that's one solution that you cannot and will not fix. And that comes with a certain amount of humility, but also hurt and pain, because you can't fix this. That's just one more thing that you can say, I can't fix it. Secondly, if you're a person, a man of color, and you are the one with the lived experience, now you feel inadequate even more, because not only can you not fix it, you may not even be able to protect and provide. You may not even be able to provide for your family, your mom, your whoever, because you don't have the mental stability and mental health to do it. So now that's when drugs, alcohol, self-medication, these things come along to numb that pain of inadequacy. I'm just less than. So now there's self-esteem issues, insecurities, all those things, because you're less than. Everyone sees you as less than. So, and I'll end it with this. In that community, when you're a man and you have mental illness and you can't protect, provide stability, security, it's the same as being absent. So you might as well, in his mind, I might as well be absent like all the other men that are physically absent, because I'm mentally absent. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's a different dynamic. And I'm very passionate about that dynamic, because I think if we did get the treatment and did get the medication and learn to manage it, I think they can see that you're not less than. You just live with a mental illness that can be managed, and you are adequate enough to help protect, provide support for your particular family structure and community.
Charnell Nunley and Leonard are both educators and advocates with NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness. They are here in Austin. And thank you both so much for your time and all of your information and discussion today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. We appreciate platforms like this to be able to speak openly about mental illness. So thank you so much, Jennifer.